Quaker Meeting in Portland, Oregon.
You can find more information about our community at westhillsfriends.org.
As a Quaker community, we encourage everyone to share from their hearts,
especially as it pertains to God's leading in their lives.
These words are shared into a community that values the opportunity to respond and dialogue about what is said.
The responses and dialogue are not included in this recording.
The views expressed in this content are solely those of the original contributor
and do not necessarily speak for the entire West Hills Friends community.
Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day.
It was early February in Oregon, so I was excited to see sunlight. The clouds were slowly moving, and I couldn't wait until they were gone so that I could see the sun behind the clouds. I watched and watched, and then at last the clouds moved and there was no sun, just bluish gray sky. It seemed almost as if the sky had absorbed the sun. I realized that I hadn't been seeing the sun behind the clouds, but the sun reflected in the clouds. Rather than seeing that the clouds were reflecting the light, I thought that they were hiding it. This struck me as a metaphor for life. Maybe when all is smooth in my life, all the light, all the God gets absorbed and I don't see it. And it's only when my life gets cloudy that I see the light reflected. Maybe all the problems in my life that I think are hiding God are really reflecting God. Maybe I need the clouds in life in order to see the light. Maybe all the light I see in life is reflected light. Maybe, like Paul, seeing the light directly would blind me. Metaphors help us understand and describe concepts that are hard to grasp or explain otherwise. God and religion and spiritual ideas such as faith and heaven and love are often described by metaphors and can be metaphors themselves for something beyond them, something indescribable. In his book, Reading the Bible Again for the Very First Time, Marcus Borg writes about taking the Bible seriously, but not literally. I believe Carol Cresswell said, all of the stories in the Bible are true, and some of them actually happened. My granddaughter, who is 6, recently learned about God from 2 of her playmates. She called and asked me if God was a she or a he. I said neither, that not everything or even everybody is a he or a she. Reese was confused. I said, water is not a she or a he. The wind is not a she or a he. The sun is not a she or a he. These are all really important, powerful things, just like God, and they aren't she's or he's. Reese corrected me and said that the sun is a she. It is? Yes, her name is Mary. I wondered if she was talking about Jesus's mother, Mary. But then I realized that she was thinking about the song, Good Morning, Mary Sunshine. I explained that the song was just somebody's idea and that another song that goes Mr. Sun, Sun, Mr. Golden Sun is someone else's idea. People make up stories to explain their ideas about things like the sun or God, I told her. And because it's their story, they decide whether it's a he or a she. But it's still just a story. Then she told me about a few Bible stories she had learned from these friends. The creation story, which she believes because apparently computers were also created on the first day. The Ten Commandments story, which she doesn't believe, mainly because she likes to swear. And the story about the war between Satan and the angels, which she believes, who knows why. I told her that these are stories and not necessarily exactly true, that people use stories that aren't true to try to explain things that are true. She was doubtful, and so I thought I'd demonstrate. One of her favorite things for us to do together, I'm embarrassed to say, is for me to tell her outrageous lies. Basically about how great I am. Her favorite ones are about Mr. Beast, a quite obnoxious and wildly popular YouTuber whom she is obsessed with.
These stories are about how amazing I am and how lame he is, and how obsessed he is with me and her. Stories like he and I went skydiving and I had to save his life when he was too scared to open his parachute. Or he and I went deep sea diving and I had to save him from sharks because he panicked and did something stupid. So I told her that Mr. Beast had called me the day before. I said that because he thinks she's perfect, he told me that he would give me $100 to stop being her grandparent and let him be her grandparent instead. Obviously, I said absolutely not. And so he offered me $1,000 and then $10,000 and then $1,000,000 and then $1,000,000,000. And I finally had to say, listen, Mr. Beast, I love Reese so much that I will never stop being her grandparent. I would not stop being Reese's grandparent for all the money in the world. And if you ever ask me again, I will stop being your friend. And then I hung up on it. Reese absolutely loved this story. Then I explained to her that this is like a story in the Bible or in other religious scriptures. We know that this story isn't really true, I said. Mr. Beast didn't really call me. But the story is telling you something that is very true. That I love you so much that I will never stop being your grandmother. That I would not stop being your grandparent for all the money in the world. I explained that maybe Moses didn't actually go up on a mountain and get tablets, but that the Ten Commandments could still be true. You shouldn't kill or lie or steal. She was unimpressed. Religious stories are full of metaphors, and some, such as the parables or the 23rd Psalm, are obviously metaphors. But they are not always understandable taken out of the context of their time. As a child, I memorized the 23rd Psalm and sang I Am Jesus' Little Lamb in Sunday school, but the idea of God as shepherd had no real meaning to me. I didn't know any sheep. I didn't know any shepherds. Then I read a book called A Shepherd Looks at the 23rd Psalm, where the author explains every part of the psalm from a shepherd's point of view, and suddenly the metaphor had meaning. The Lord doesn't literally anoint David's head with oil. It's a metaphor. However, anointing a sheep's head with oil is critical, not just for the health and comfort of the individual sheep, but for the flock as a whole. If you don't understand why and how a shepherd anoints a sheep's head with oil, the original meaning of the metaphor is lost. Other metaphors are not as obviously metaphors. If we don't know the historical context of Jesus' lifetime, we're not aware that in many cultures of the time, virgin births and resurrections were common literary devices. But the fact that they are metaphors doesn't mean that they aren't meaningful. We can see the virgin birth as just a metaphor, a literary device to stress how important Jesus was. We can see the resurrection as a metaphor for another way for Jesus to continue to be with us after his death. Or we can see them as a way for God to take common metaphors of the time and make them literally true, to make them miracles. But does whether they are literally true or just metaphors really change the meaning they hold for us? Reese knew that the Mr. Beast story wasn't true. But several times since then, I've heard her say into an imaginary phone, "No, Mr. Beast, you cannot be my grandmother. No, I will not stop having my own grandmother for all the money in the world." Although it's a metaphor, she has obviously embraced the truth of it. Some stories are both literal truth and metaphor. I literally saw the light reflected in the clouds, and it was a metaphor for something beyond that. In his book, How to Stay Married, Harrison Scott Key asks, "What if God and Jesus are metaphors for something too impossible to fathom, which we attempt to fathom anyway? What if the endless fathoming is our duty? What if God and Jesus aren't metaphors at all? What if they're real? What if everything else is a metaphor for them?" One reason we need metaphors and that metaphors change for us is because the meanings of words are not fixed and concrete, but fluid and always changing. Quakers use the word query, and generally in English, the word query is a synonym for the word question. This can lead people to think that a query is a question that is meant to be answered. A question seems to demand an answer. Scam artists and salespeople take advantage of the fact that when we are asked a question, we think we are supposed to, even obligated to answer it. But queries in the Quaker sense are not meant to be answered. Rather, they are meant as openings for self-contemplation and self-examination. Quaker queries are described as deep, almost unanswerable questions used for reflection, tools directing us toward the source of guidance. Queries aren't requests for answers, but invitations to turn inwardly. From that contemplation and reflection will sometimes arise a leading that we feel compelled to share, not by ourselves or our egos, but by something beyond us. So much of what we believe to be true in life is formed and informed by metaphor. So many of our ideas about things, about God and religion and grammar and marriage and gender, are constructs, always evolving. These metaphors and the meanings that they hold for us are always changing. Yet it's easy to decide that our metaphors and constructs are the right and true ones, and that someone else's are invalid. Metaphors help us understand God. Uh-oh, another cough. Sorry. Metaphors help us understand God, but they aren't the only way to understand God, and they don't help us to understand all of God. St. Augustine said, "If you understand, it is not God." I was so impressed with my metaphor about the light and the clouds until I thought of the poem Footprints. You've probably all read it. A man dreams that he is walking in the sand and he reviews his life, and there are usually two sets of footprints, except for the times when he needs God most. He asks why God was never with him when most needed, and God says that that's when God carried him. I don't really like that poem. In fact, I've always hated it. And I see it everywhere. It's like it's stalking me. I can't go to Goodwill without being assaulted by a copy of it. But thinking of my brilliant light on the clouds metaphor, I realized that it really wasn't that different from the footsteps metaphor. I thought my metaphor was so profound and so moving, and I completely discarded the footsteps in the sand metaphor as being trite, a cliche. We so often reject each other's metaphors while holding our own sacred. But why? Why can't we have our own metaphors, our own constructs for things, and allow other people to have theirs? What makes our ideas about God, about life, about right and wrong, about gender, about marriage, about anything, more valid than anyone else's? Rather than queries, as we move into open worship, we are going to hear a song, "God is the River" by Peter Mayer, that has other metaphors for God. I invite you to enter into a time of contemplation and self-reflection, a time of trying to fathom the unfathomable, from which you may receive a leading to speak. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to our podcast. We're really happy that so many of you are finding it to be helpful and as a way to stay connected with what's going on with us here at West Hills Friends. If you'd like to stay connected with us in other ways, we have a couple options for you. You can check out our website. It's westhillsfriends.org. There you'll find some more information about who we are as a community. You can also follow us on Facebook. We have a Facebook account by just searching for West Hills Friends. You can also follow us on Instagram. We have a Instagram account with the name West Hills Friends. So we hope that you'll get connected with us in other ways. And again, thanks for taking the time to listen to this podcast.